of ours is under attack. Time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just go wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Everybody, welcome back into the show. Second hour on this Friday, the last show of 2023, December 29th. Greatly appreciate you guys being part of it here. Your Defending Fathers with Chuck and Randy Bishop on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. As usual, joining us in this hour on Fridays is a history lesson discussion with Pastor Chatfield. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Well, the topic you texted me this morning, important United States treaties, and I want to take this short segment here to kind of explain to people U.S. treaties and the fact that how they are entered into, who has to discuss them, vote on them, approve them. How is that process actually done here in the United States?
Well, the executive branch has the constitutional authority to you know, make treaties, but then the Senate, specifically of the legislative branch, has to approve all treaties. And so that is the story. Two-thirds majority vote to approve of a treaty. And what's happened recently in our history is if you can't get a two-thirds majority, don't call it a treaty, call it an agreement or something, and try to avoid, like, one of the recent Iran agreements with that President Biden made with Iran. He didn't call it a treaty because you could never get two-thirds majority of vote in the Senate to approve of it. So he called it an agreement. It could be bad agreement. In other words, the president can make bad agreements, but he can't make bad treaties without the Senate approving of the treaties.
And when you say two-thirds, you're talking specifically 67 United States U.S. senators out of 100 have to ratify the treaty.
Correct.
Now, in that process, I've never seen it. I haven't witnessed it. I've never seen it on C-SPAN. I've never watched it actually ever occur in my lifetime. I've never done it. I know there's probably been treaties signed since I was born in 1958. Have you ever witnessed the actual process on the U.S. Senate floor?
No, I've never exactly. Well, I've seen portions of it in the debates. Most of the time, the Senate goes along with the president, but not always. Remember when Woodrow Wilson signed the Treaty of Versailles, came back to the United States, wouldn't compromise on any issues, and eventually that was defeated in the United States Senate, and we went back to simply the armistice that was signed, and there was never a treaty that we entered into.
Ending World War One.
Correct, and that's why it was just a ceasefire, and The big issue there was the creation of the United Nations, which the America was not ready to do. And and Henry Cabot Lodge, a senator from Massachusetts, Republican, says, no, I've got one flag I'm loyal to. I don't need he called it a mongrel banner. of the United Nations. Excuse me, at the time, the League of Nations. He wouldn't do it, and the American people were with him. Wilson died. He had a stroke and died of a very frail man in the last few months of his presidency. His wife basically ran the country for us, which is one of the reasons why we have a 25th Amendment now. If somebody gets totally incapacitated, the vice president and the majority of the cabinet can say this man cannot run the country, and then the vice president becomes president. Anyway.
Yep. Many say we are currently in that state right now with Biden.
Maybe.
I'm just going to leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that.
Let's not get off track. Let's stay on track. Okay. But one last question for you, and we're going to go into the next segment with this. Treaties began a long time ago, and that's probably, I'm assuming, where you're going to start with.
Yeah, I'll go in chronological order. Treaty of Paris, which secured the independence of the United States.
Oh, perfect. Good, good, good. I love when the country was created. Short break. I'm Trucker Randy. He's Pastor Chatfield. We'll be right back. Trucker Randy here. Let's face it, we're all getting older, but we don't have to feel the pains of getting older. Most people and even our pets have daily pain. Don't let pain slow you down. Get natural relief with CBD products from Patriots Relief. Designed by nature and trusted by millions, CBD synergistically works with your body to naturally relieve pain along with many other benefits. CBD is not marijuana and you will not get high. Vicki and I trust Patriots Relief products because they truly work. Go to their website, patriotsrelief.com, then call Tim and his family at 877-230-1776. Mention the promo code TR1 to get the biggest discounts. Again, call 877-230-1776 and mention TR1. patriotsrelief.com.
My name is Todd Spalver. I'm running to be your state representative in the 106th District. One of the reasons that I am running is because our current public education system is failing our children. I support real common sense policies and approaches to education and the safety of our children. All parents have a right to decide on their children's education, not the government or unions. I will fight to ensure that. After all, they are our most precious resources we have, and they are worth the fight. Vote for me, Todd Spalver, electsmalenberg.com. Paid for by Todd Spalver for state rep.
And now this from Northern Michigan RV.
Hi, I'm Tony Kessering from Northern Michigan RV in Galen. Get ready for a new adventure with help from Northern Michigan RV. We sell everything from pop-ups and truck campers to luxury fifth wheels, and we have everything to keep you going, including parts, full service, and even propane. And we're open year-round. Don't buy anywhere before stopping into Northern Michigan RV. Off 32 on Expressway Court behind Walgreens and Gaylord. Online at northernmichiganrv.com. Get ready for a new adventure at Northern Michigan RV.
The Well Connect End of the Year Blowout Sale is here. A factory direct do-it-yourself install package is now available to our listeners. Call 231-420-8320 to find out how you can buy a Well Connect geothermal unit at a DIY discounted price. Install it yourself and qualify for a 30% federal income tax credit off your 2023 taxes. Additionally, you'll receive a cash rebate from your local electric co-op company. Well Connect uses your well water to do 80% to 90% of heating your home this winter, 100% air conditioning your home next summer, just by calling 231-420-8320. Again, save money, get a 30% federal income tax credit before the end of this year, and start saving money every month while enjoying total year-round comfort. Again, call 231-420-8320. Do it today.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment of today's history lesson discussion with Pastor Chatfield. We're going to go all the way back to the founding of our country and talk about U.S.-United States treaties.
Okay, so the Treaty of Paris ended the war. I'm going to make a point now that is going to work for every single treaty ever. Because at the end, I always run out of time. Three ideas. One, successful treaties are only ever made from a position of strength. Only ever made from a position of strength. It's human nature. That is the way that is. I mean, there was some treaties made, I'm going to jump ahead, in the 1790s, one by John Jay with Great Britain. And it was, he was a good, smart man, good negotiator. But, I mean, he said, I could travel all the way up and down the east coast of the United States by the burning of an effigy. You wouldn't need a light, because he was railed upon for the treaty he made with Great Britain, trying to secure some of the things that they had promised to do after the revolution never did. Why? Because we didn't have the strength. We were a fledgling nation with small military. In Britain, you could only get what you could get. I don't care how good a negotiator you are. And then on the other hand, the Pinckney Treaty, a year earlier, I think, with Spain, it was very successful treaty called the Pinckney Treaty. And the Jay Treaty was called the Jay Treaty. The Pinckney was successful because Spain was weakening in its power, had so many issues in Latin America at the time, and Latin American countries were beginning to revolt against Spanish rule, and they were preoccupied. They couldn't control. And so these treaties, you always have to be from a position of strength, always. It's like the treaty at the end of a war. Who gets to call the shots? Whoever wins the war. That's the general rule. You lose the war. I mean, you don't come to the bargaining table with much. That's just the way it is. Treaties have to be made from a position of strength. Let me tell you this. Two, politics are always involved somewhere. National politics, local politics, world politics. There's always something else going on. When you sit across the table with this person negotiating, if you know their national politics, local politics, if you understand geopolitics, world politics, you'll get a better result. That is always an issue. The more I read on this, I say, if the Democrats were making Democratic Republicans made a treaty early on, like, say, the Louisiana Purchase, the Federalists didn't like it. If the Federalists were making a treaty, the Republicans didn't like it. If the Republicans make a treaty today, the Democrats don't like it. If the Democrats make a treaty, the Republicans don't like it. I mean, you're always an angle going on. There's always some politics. Lastly, least importantly, is the negotiators. But if you're a good negotiator, then you know the art of the deal. That makes a difference too. I mean, you got to know how to negotiate. But even President Trump said, "Hey, you got to come from this in a position of strength, not weakness." That's just the way it works, and that's true in all history. Okay, Treaty of Paris ended the war. Now, remember, we defeated the British, Cornwallis, Washington, and De Grasse. The French fleet defeated the French in 1781 at Yorktown, but the treaty wasn't completed till 1783, and it was done by some, you know, great guy, John Jay, John Adams, Ben Franklin, Henry Lawrence, William Temple Franklin, all negotiated this treaty. And we got good results because we won the war. According to Great Britain, they called this an exceeding generous treaty for us, for the Americans. And it's this interesting side note. The treaty starts off, and the preamble says, "In the name of the most holy and undivided Trinity." That's the way the treaty starts. Hey, in other words, we're kind of Christian nations, and we declare our belief in the Holy Trinity, which I find interesting. Only one article of this still remains, and this is the main thrust, of course, obviously, of the Treaty of Paris, that Great Britain acknowledges the United States' existence as a free, sovereign, and independent states. They're free, sovereign, independent states. I would just make this note. At the time, it didn't say the United States is an independent country. The treaty said free, sovereign, independent states. Because it was – during this times, you would say the United States are. Today, we say the United States is. It wasn't until the Civil War that was very clear that we are one nation, indissoluble. You cannot separate us state from state. That was kind of settled in the Civil War. Since the Civil War, we always say the United States is. We don't say the United States are. But before the Civil War, we said the United States are. The power of the states was much greater. Okay, I got a bunch to go through. Here's an important one, the Louisiana Purchase, 1803. Okay, it's where we purchased from France for, it was like 530 million acres. Basically, $18 per acre. We purchased all Louisiana. What had happened was President Jefferson, third president of the United States, had sent James Monroe, Robert Livingston to New Orleans to try to purchase New Orleans so we could have a right to deposit and our goods could flow down the Ohio to the Mississippi and into to the Gulf of Mexico and we could trade. But when we got there, the French said, why don't you just buy the whole thing from us? Now, Napoleon Bonaparte was in power at this time. And there was a bunch of issues in which, and here's the geopolitics. He was waging a war in Europe, and he made the calculation, you know what, I'm not going to mess with the Western Hemisphere right now. It's too far. I'm going to concentrate on winning my war in Europe. So he sold portions of Louisiana, which is not just Louisiana, but a half a million acres for $15 million. It basically doubled the size of the country. Now, in America, what was going on? I mean, you had Jefferson, who was a strict constructionist, and there was really nothing in the Constitution that kind of directed him. He had the power to make negotiations to buy property, but he did. And went back to Congress, and it overwhelmingly passed. But there were some Federalists that say, whoa, wait a minute here. This is totally inconsistent here, Mr. Jefferson. You're the one that says you can't go beyond the Constitution. Here you are. And we've talked about the Louisiana Purchase before, but it's one of those things. It was a good deal. It did expand the size of the country, and it did expand the power of the presidency to do this. But it was voted on. It was very close in the House. They did appropriate the money to buy it, mm-hmm. but it wasn't close at all in the Senate. The Senate overwhelmingly voted for it. Okay, I'll just briefly touch on this one. It's called the Adams-Onis Treaty. This is the treaty in 1819 in which we purchased Florida from Spain in 1819. And again, just for a few million dollars, I'm going to say $5 million. I didn't look that up. But it's about $5 million. And here was the story. The Seminole Indians were in North Florida, and they had been going across the Florida-Georgia border attacking our settlements. General Andrew Jackson, without the president's approval, took his men and started chasing the Seminoles into Florida territory, which belonged to Spain. And Spain says, you can't do that. And Jackson says, he just did it anyway. That's Andrew Jackson. Now, this came to the attention of President Monroe, and he didn't like it, but he kind of liked it. So he sent John Quincy Adams to Spain to negotiate. Now, John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson later would become political rivals for sure. You know,
sure,
very much in 1824 when Adams was elected president. But here, Adams knew that he could be more or less be the good cop, bad cop. Look, this, you know, that maybe this general is a little bit out of hand here, but if you'll sell this property to us, you won't have to worry about us going into your territory and taking it. So he negotiated this treaty. So it's the Adams, named after John Quincy Adams, Onis Treaty. It's called the Florida Purchase Treaty or Florida Treaty, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we expanded from a position of strength. And basically we said this, if you can't control the Indians there, we'll control them. And we'll take Florida from you if you can't control them, because we're not going to allow them to attack our settlements in Georgia, then flee back into Florida. We're going to chase them down. Again, I'm just saying that is something you see over and over and over. here. The next one is the Webster-Ashburton Treaty. This settled, this is 1842, this settles the boundary dispute up in Maine. If you look at the a map of the United States, you'll know that there's that Maine boundary is not exactly, it kind of runs oddly. And we, there was something called the Aroostook War, that we basically were ready to go to war with Britain, just kind of a, over a certain border. I mean, it was a big deal.
Sure.
A big deal. I could just say, just give me a parenthetical. It almost reminds me of the almost the Toledo War between Michigan and Ohio, when we wanted Toledo, and the national government says, okay, you can't have Toledo, but we'll give you the Upper Peninsula. That's how we got the Upper Peninsula.
That's how we got the UP.
Yeah, as belonging to Michigan.
Right.
I mean, we're ready to go to go to war over this. This was negotiated by Daniel Webster during the Tyler administration, and Tyler was a very unpopular president, but it kind of settled the border up there in the Northeast, and that that again was 1842. Let me give you another, the next treaty.
Can I ask you real quick a question?
Anytime, go ahead.
Why the heck did we want Toledo?
Because it was a town, it was a city.
And I understand, but I mean, geographically, if you look at the Great Lakes, you know, the Lake Michigan with Indiana, that border, the line that we actually have, you know, through Monroe and across to, you know, Lake Erie. One of the things I ask is Toledo seems like such a far reach with regards to, because many of our borders are always surrounded by water, the Ohio River, you know, Pennsylvania. I mean, the rivers go on and on and on, defining states.
Let me stop you. That river, it's like the saying, tall fences make good neighbors.
Right.
Rivers throughout the world and the United States, the Ohio River, Mississippi River, Missouri River, form the borders between many states, and it's definitive.
Yes.
But
Mississippi, look at the Mississippi River.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Arkansas, Texas, Missouri, I mean, it goes on and on and on. I just never understood that discussion about Toledo, Ohio.
I don't know all the details.
But now that's interesting. How was it the UP then was swapped for it? How did that dynamic work?
I don't think virtually so few people lived in the UP. It was the national government says, "Hey, we'll solve this dispute. We'll give the Upper Peninsula to Michigan." And you look up in the Upper Peninsula, where's the border? It's the Menominee River up there between.
Yeah.
It's almost always.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost always rivers that form borders because it's more definitive. Let me tell you something else. Back in these days, I mean, who would go to war, Michigan to Ohio, over who gets Toledo? I mean,
right.
Our first view of ourselves today is Americans. Way more than Michiganders or Ohioans. Now we have our rivalries in Michigan, Ohio State, and all that. But that's surely we understand. We don't view ourselves fundamentally as Michiganians or Michiganders. We view ourselves first as Americans, but that is not true. Not true in the 18th and 19th century, the first half of the 19th century. I mean, people considered themselves Virginians.
Right.
And Robert E. Lee, he was a Virginian first, and he wanted to stay in the Union, but he was an American second. But that changed after the Civil War.
Yep.
That's the way it was. Let me give you this other one. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which is a town in – oops, I guess there's the music.
That's a perfect spot to stop right there. Bound the Hour News Break. More with the History Lesson with Pastor Chatfield. Treaties – the United States. We'll be right back.